Okay, let's turn to Ephesians 5. Ephesians chapter 5. And so the last couple classes we've been going through chapter 5, 22, and we finished with 29 last week. We went 22 through 24 and talking specifically about wives a couple weeks ago and the role of the wife and some of the women in the Bible that were the great women in the Bible, like Ruth, who has a book, Abigail, who is David's wife, Esther, who has a book in the Bible, and how they became successful and how they became wasn't because of their overstepping authority or assertive words. It was because of their submissiveness. Okay, that's how they became. That's how they were successful. Ruth wasn't successful. It was successful because she was submissive. Esther was successful because she was submissive. We talked last week about husbands and how it's our job as husbands and the head of the house and leaders to bear a lot of the burden and to present our bride as just as Christ presents the church, which is his bride, without spot or wrinkle to be holy and blameless. And we talked a little bit about how to love our wives as our own bodies, and we kind of covered that in the idea of that sacrifice or idea of loving through the tough times. And we looked at Hosea and that example of how he married a wife of harlotry and how Gomer had two other children probably that weren't his. And then when she was at the bottom of the bottom of the bucket, if you will, when she was at her lowest point, when no one else wanted her, he still went and cared for her and took her back to be with him. And we looked at that, how that, and that's an extreme example for sure. But we looked at how he handled that. We looked at how he was willing to bear that. Okay? And so, in Boaz's case with Ruth, it's easy to be a leader of a wife that's submissive and that does a lot of stuff right. But in Hosea's case, it's a lot harder. But they both still were the husbands that were seeking the best for the wife. Okay, and so today we're going to pick up in verse 30. We read verse 30 last week a little bit. But we're going to pick up here, verse 30. If someone want to read that, please.
And that's Ephesians 5.
Yes.
Because we are members of his body.
Okay. So if we're looking here, this is an important, I know it's not a long verse, but if we're looking at Christ and the church and the relationship how Christ loves the church and what he does for her and how the church is submissive to Christ and everything. If we're looking at that and we're gauging that with how the husband and wife relationship is, when we look at what the church is to Christ, we are members of his body, and that makes sense what he says prior to that in verse 29. No one ever hated his own flesh but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church. And so when we're looking there is that if we're applying that to Christ and the church, that also is the same application to the husband and the wife. Okay? So when we care for our spouse, we're caring for the spouse like we would our own body. Okay? When we want something to grow, we want something to succeed, or we care for it, we don't hurt it, we do things to help it. Okay? And so that's the goal, the goal is to succeed, but the job and the task is to help the body grow. So if we look at our bodies, if we're gonna help be strong or a lot of us are past the growing stage now. But when we were little, if we were malnutrition, the body wouldn't grow properly. Okay, and so that's. When we look at that as in the case of the husband and wife, the marriage isn't going to grow if there's not effort to help it grow, okay? It kind of carries on into the next verse. Go to verse 31. Someone read that, please.
For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and shall be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh.
Okay, so this here, when he is talking about, this is what God tells Adam after he creates Eve and they're married, but as we'll see here in a second, this is talking about Christ and the church. But if Christ and the church is the example of the husband and wife, then obviously that applies. But a lot of times we get this application, we separate it. We say, well, in verse 30, that's talking about Christ and the church, but verse 31 is talking about the husband and the wife. The thing is that there it's multifold there. It's talking about both. So when we're talking about in the case of Christ and the church, you know, a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, in reference to Christ and the church, where Christ and the church are one, that same is true again for the husband and wife. But if we're one flesh, that carries back into the verse prior to that, where we are one body, so we nourish and we care for that. Now, I think the word for care and nourish for in verse 29, I think it's used at one other time talking about raising up children. Okay, and I think, well, I don't have that right in front of me, so I'm not going to say where that is. I'm pretty sure it's in chapter 6, but we'll look at that next week, obviously. But it's the idea of caring and helping it come along. So if you were to have the idea of a child, okay, we're caring for the child, we are helping the child grow, the child is learning. Okay, we are, in a lot of ways, as parents, we bear the burdens of the child. Well, that same is true for the spouse too. We are bearing burdens of the spouse to help the spouse grow for the benefit of the spouse, just as Christ did for the church to help the church. And we'll get into a lot more of that in a minute here, but I just want to read verse 32.
This mystery is great, but I am speaking with reference to Christ and the church.
Okay, so we referenced this before, that this is talking about Christ and the church. So when we look at that, when we're going to go through some passages here, and it's talking about Christ and the church, or it's talking about the body, or the church as the body, we need to apply that then. If he's applying that here to Christ and the church, then when it talks about the church or as the body or the relationship of Christ and the church in other passages, then that same type of love or that same type of help needs to apply. If it applies to the church, it should apply to the marriage. Let's turn back to Ephesians chapter 1. This has been quite a while ago since we read this. I was looking the other day, or today, in this notebook. In October, we were only one chapter in chapter 4. So it's been a while since we've been in chapter 1. So verse 22 and 23. Someone read that, please.
He put all things in subjection under his feet and gave him as head over all things to the church, which is his body, the fullness of him who filled it all in all.
Okay, so the question is that when did Christ, or when did the Father put all things in subjection to Christ?
From the beginning,
but it specifically says here in verse 20, after he humbled himself, I should say that. After Christ humbled himself, when did the Father put everything in subjection to him?
After he ascended.
Okay, so after he ascended, so after he suffered then, right, would have been? So Christ first had to suffer to have the authority, to be the king, to be the groom. Christ suffered for his bride first, or sacrificed for his bride, or we'll use another word, bore a burden for her, or another word we'll talk about today, he loved his bride before he got the bride. Okay? Now, Those online, we're going to shut off for a minute, so we'll be back on in a second. Back online now. Let's turn to Romans chapter 5. Romans chapter 5. Someone want to read verse 8, please.
But God demonstrates his own love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us.
Okay, so we're applying the Christ and the church relationship to the husband and wife. Okay, so if you're, and you could say, well, this is specifically, you know, I mean, Christ is the husband, the church is the bride. But when we're talking about demonstrating love, while we didn't deserve it, is what would be a way of saying, yeah, we are yet sinners, or while we didn't deserve it, Christ died, Christ loved us. He demonstrated his love by dying while we didn't deserve it. So if you think about that, if you're applying that then to what the relationship of, and that type of love that Christ has, okay, because even if you want to say, well, Christ is the husband and the bride is the church, and so, you know, and I'm not saying that the husbands, as husbands, we need to be leaders in that. Okay, we need to be leaders, and I think if we get to another spot in Romans here, that's what the word is being leader in love. But when we're looking at that, the spouse wasn't deserving of love before Christ loved the spouse. Okay, so that doesn't mean that just because the spouse doesn't love us, or maybe the spouse isn't deserving of that, thus that we shouldn't show that love or demonstrate that love with sacrifice, is what it was, is what how he demonstrated that love. Let's turn to 1 John chapter 4. 1 John chapter 4. First John chapter 4, someone want to read 7 through 12, please.
Beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God. And everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. The one who does not love does not know God, for God is love. By this the love of God was manifested in us, that God has sent his only begotten Son into the world so that we might live through him. In this is love, not that we love God, but that we loved that he loved us and sent his Son to be the propitiation for our sins. Beloved, if God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has beheld God at any time. If we love one another, God abides in us, and his love is perfected in us.
Okay, this is talking about love amongst the brethren here. This is talking about what love is. Love comes from God, but he says, beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God, in verse 7. And then if you look in verse 11, beloved, God, if God so loved us, we ought to love one another. So if you, even on a person, like a non-spousal standpoint, that love is supposed to be for the brethren, regardless if the brethren made us upset that day. Okay, if something happened that bothered us, but the love is perfected. If we love one another, God abides in us, and his love is perfected. Okay, so when we're talking about loving one another, and we're talking about, you know, obviously this is talking here specifically about the brethren and then the body, but if we're talking, apply that to, we definitely apply it to amongst spouse, then that the love of God is not perfected, if we don't love the brethren, we can't think the love of God is going to be perfected if we're not loving our spouse either. We can't think that God's, that we have the love of God if we don't do that. Let's turn to Romans 12. Our love shows the true fruit. Romans chapter 12. Someone to read 9 and 10, please.
Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil, cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor.
Okay. So that word in verse 10, it says, is for translated preference. That means to go before as a leader. Okay, so the church, you know, we didn't deserve love, but Christ demonstrated it. He was a leader in that. Okay, when we are loving, the encouragement that Paul gives here is to give preference to one another in honor, to be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Be a leader in that. Okay, don't wait for the other person to do that. Okay, because that's... Jesus says, and I don't have the in front of me, but he talks about how if you love those who loved you, what is that? The Gentiles even love their own. You know, they even love those who love them. It's easy to love someone who loves us. It's not as easy to love someone who hates us. And so when we're talking about that with a spouse, why are we not loving them first? You know, we should be leading in love. Okay, because it's easy to love someone after they already loved us and they're kind to us and do things good to us. It's easy to be a spouse to someone who is fulfilling their role as a spouse. But just because they're not does not mean that it means that we don't have to fulfill our role as a spouse either. Doesn't mean we don't have to be the loving husband or the submissive wife or leading in love. Turn to Romans chapter 13. Someone read verse 8 through 10. Okay. We are to love our neighbor, but we're not to love our spouse. I mean, shouldn't we love our spouse much more if we're going to love the neighbor? Now, it's not only talking about the guy living next door. That's talking about the brethren here, I think. And it can be talking about it in a more broad sense too, of loving the people and having that love that Christ has. But if we're willing, we you know, have Bible studies with people, or we'll just use the word again, make a lot of sacrifice or bear a burden for someone and to help them out, but we don't do that for the spouse. We do that for someone else that, you know, we're willing to give the shirt off our back. So how much more should we be willing to do that for the spouse then? Turn to Romans 14. Someone read verse 15, please. Okay, so this might not seem it very much that really points to love between spouses. But when you look at that, when Paul is using the word food there, and in the context he's talking about the one who is weak and it's hard for them to eat meat, you know, or certain kinds of meat. I mean, it could go both ways. It could go as Jews eating unclean meat, and that was hard for them because it was so ingrained in them. And the Paul is talking maybe about being kind or to those who have to deal with that. And another way he would be saying here too is that those who, when they sacrificed to idols, those who were participating now would eat the meat there, and therefore they're participating in the idol worship. So when you get new Christians coming off of that and coming out of that, and they're weak, and then they see someone else eating that meat, and it bothers them, and that's hard because that's tough for a new Christian. They're still wrapping their mind about a lot of things. They're doing a lot of changing. Paul is saying, hey, be considerate of that brother that it is weak in that, so that you don't destroy a brother for whom Christ died because of your food. So you could take that word, it doesn't just apply to food here. This could apply to, it doesn't say alcohol, but you could apply this alcohol here too. If an alcoholic becomes a Christian and someone in their conscience is fine to drink alcohol, an older Christian, how much are you going to cause your brother to stumble to have them for dinner and use that out and drink the alcohol if he's struggling with that? And how much are we willing to go? Are we going to destroy in that sense there for the sake of having the alcohol that doesn't bother our conscience? If it doesn't bother your conscience, that's fine. But we're going to destroy him for whom Christ died so that we can have that drink. So if it doesn't just apply to food, it can apply to alcohol. It could apply to things in a marriage too. If we're always call it the peddly things that irritate us. Okay? Are we going to let a peddly thing destroy the marriage and destroy the spirit of the one for whom Christ died? Or are we going to bear the burden and make the sacrifice? Now, it doesn't mean that person who had the problem with the food could just keep having the problem with the food no matter what and didn't matter. It didn't mean that someone who was an alcoholic has to go and just break any alcohol bottle and just despise anyone who has a clean conscience of drinking alcohol. That's not right for them to do there either. It doesn't mean it's right for the spouse to whatever problem they have to remain and not overcome that for a long period of time. But what are we as spouses doing to help the spouse through that other than just being, hey, you need to quit that? Would Jesus do that? God wouldn't approve of this. I'm not saying that God does approve of it. I'm just saying how, when we're making that list of how we can, what we can do to care for our spouse or to help them, is there ways that we can do, is there things that we can do to help them overcome that peddly thing, if you will, so they can overcome that? Is there things that we can communicate to them to help them overcome what little things keep us from loving our spouse? Let's turn to Romans 15. So I want to read 1 through 3, please. Okay. So we're getting again there. It doesn't specifically talk about the spousal relationship, but it does talk about the neighbor. It does talk about those of us who are strong to bear the weaknesses of those without strength. It does talk about please the neighbor, or I'll change the word to please the spouse, for the edification of the spouse, because Christ is that example, both for us to do that, both for the brethren and for the lost, but especially to the spouse. Okay, because Christ didn't even please himself, but made the sacrifice. It wasn't something that he just really loved to do. It wasn't convenient for him to do that. It was a lot more than a peddly little thing that he had to deal with and take care of. But he was willing to make the sacrifice to bear the burden. And if we're going to go and study with the lost or be an example to the lost, and we're willing to bear the burden for them and to help them, hey, I'm here for what you when you need me. We should definitely be willing to do that for the spouse. Let's turn to Galatians chapter 6. Let's start it in verse 1. 1 and 2, please.
Brethren, even if a man is caught in a trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and thus fulfill the law.
Okay. So just think about that for a second. And then there was one back in Galatians chapter 5, verse 14, where Paul writes, he says, "For the whole law is fulfilled in one word, in the statement, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." That sounds kind of familiar, right? No one ever hates his own body, but nourishes and cherishes it. Okay? Love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite, in verse 15, and devour one another, take care lest you be consumed by one another. So if we're looking at that, this is applying to the body, okay? And he talks about loving your neighbor as yourself. But when we're looking at what Paul writes is, no one ever hated his own body, but nourishes and cherishes it. Wouldn't that kind of fall into the same category as loving your spouse as yourself? And if your spouse was, if the neighbor was the body, or if your neighbor was the people in general, wouldn't your spouse fall under that category too? So if you look at that in verse 1 of chapter 6 then, if any man is caught in a trespass, you who are spiritual, restore them in the spirit of gentleness. So if our spouse is having, is there something that they're not overcoming, or there's a peddly thing, we'll say, or something that they may be doing wrong, are we restoring them in a spirit of gentleness? Or is it a sharp rebuke that's just turning them away anyway? And in verse 2, he sums that up. He says, bear one another's burdens and thus fulfill the law of Christ. I know that's talking about the body, but it definitely applies to the spouse if it's talking about the body. Okay? Bearing one another's burdens. If there's something that's wrong, is it our, you know, let's just look at, even though I don't believe in the loophole for a divorce, okay, let's just use this for an example. If somebody's looking for the loophole, is it loving if they're like, okay, there's a loophole, I can get divorced now? Is that fulfilling the law of Christ? Is that loving the neighbor as a self? Like, that's not what Christ did. I mean, how many chances are, you know, we keep asking, you know, how many chances has God given us, I should say? Okay, shouldn't we give a few more chances to our spouse, maybe? I'm not saying if they're just completely turning that. I mean, I understand that's one thing, and all those situations are different. My point is that what effort are we making to help our spouse? Or are we just looking for a reason to discredit them? Because if we look for a reason to discredit them, we're going to find the reason to discredit them, But if we're looking for a reason to help them, then we're going to have the character to try and help them through that. And I think James even talks about when they restore a man, they cover a multitude of sins. When we're looking at that, when our goal is to restore, when our goal is to help, when our goal is to restore in a spirit of gentleness, then not only does that cover a multitude of sins that were prior, but it definitely takes away the opportunity for a bunch of sin in the future. So are we willing to bear the burdens of the spouse? So back to Ephesians 5. So even though Paul is talking here and he uses the husband and wife, it's intertwined. And that's why, again, when we honestly read through this, how the church is in relationship to Christ is how the wife is in relationship to the husband, and how the husband is Christ's relationship to the church is how the husband should be in the relationship to the wife. Okay? And Paul makes that point. So he says that I'm talking about Christ and the church, but verse 33, so we want to read that.
Nevertheless, let each individual among you also love his own wife even as himself, and let the wife see to it that she respect her husband.
Okay. So even though he's talking specifically about the church in some of these things, he is using that example of Christ, of the husband and wife, or of Christ and the church for the husband and wife. So nevertheless, love your wife. And wives, respect your husbands. Are we, some things that we need to consider, is we need to have a responsibility, or we have a responsibility to fulfill be the helper for our spouse, to love the wife if you're the husband, to respect the husband if you're the wife. And some questions then would be, is that we need to ask ourselves is how can we help our spouse? Is there things that we can do to, consider that, hey, maybe my spouse had a rough day. Maybe I need to be a little more patient with them when something irritates me a little. Or is there things that we can do, steps that we can take to put ourselves in a position so that we're not easily irritable or easily short-fused so that we can help them? Is there, what can we work on to help our spouse succeed? Now, it's easy to sit and think, okay, I need to help my spouse. I'm going to try and figure this out. But maybe there's things that we need to work on that's maybe hindering our spouse from fulfilling some things that they need to do. Maybe we talk about it'd be real easy to love a spouse that fulfills their role, but are we being a spouse that's easy to love as well? Are we being a spouse that fulfills our role so that our spouse could say, yeah, my spouse is easy to love because he or she fulfills the role? Are there things that we can change to be a better spouse? Maybe there's some things that some habits, or maybe there's hobbies. Maybe if food is not something to destroy for whom Christ died, maybe a hobby is not something to destroy he or she for whom Christ died. Maybe there's something that we can do to help loosen the burden. Maybe it's, whether it's monetarily, maybe there's a spending habit. I'm not just looking at the wives here, okay? Because as husbands, we can do that too. We're not immune to it. Cal talked yesterday at the leadership summit about how we have to guard, and particularly of guarding ourselves and staying on the path of the way, Because sometimes it's easy to think that, well, we got it figured out, we're not going to fall into that. Well, the same could be true, is that if we could be, you know, we could talk about, well, I don't worry about money because I'm good and frugal. But are we getting lax and falling into some of that too? So you talk about that, and you know, like that can be a burden too. That can be a burden. Money can be a burden that causes stress, that produces impatience, that, you know, goes on down the line. You know, that maybe there's a habit that we have that affects multiple things that makes our spouse easily irritable. So are there things that we can change as a spouse to be a better spouse? That's all I have for this morning. So if there's any comments or anything. That's right. Okay, we'll pick up in chapter 6 next week.